Crack-a-lacka.
There's no arguing with the judge.
We are editing this entire segment out of the podcast.
I apologize. I will flagellate myself later.
I hope you come up with something good.
All right, this is going to go great.
How now, brown cow?
Red leather, yellow leather.
What's the haps?
What are the haps? You're listening to A Little Nonsense, where the conversation is competitive and the ads aren't real. I am your host and moderator, Joe Moracle. With me, as always, is Sean Keller.
Hi, Joe.
And Mike Pareto.
Je m'appelle Mike.
At the top of the episode, we're going to Sean. Sean, what have you got for us?
I have a segment that I'd like to call, You Are the Captain Now.
Okay. And Mike, what is You Are the Captain Now brought to us by?
Temsuderone. If you're suffering from moderate to severe IBS, it's time to think about a solution. Temsuderone is a once-daily pill to control your IBS. Stop worrying about when you'll have to go next and take control of your life with Temsuderone. Side effects include pieces of your dick falling off. Some patients taking Temsuderone have experienced complete dick disintegration. Melting of the scrotum and dick. And sudden dick explosion. And sudden dick explosion, or SDE. Every side effect is basically dick-related. But why suffer with IBS? Visit your doctor today and ask about once-daily Temsuderone for IBS. Back to you.
I guess it's safe for women?
Oh, it's perfectly harmless for women, yes.
I'll tell you the weirdest thing about that ad, gentlemen, is that you watch pretty much any ad for a pharmaceutical and they don't tell you what condition it's for. So even
that's
weirder
true,
than
yeah,
all of
right.
The side effects being dick related is them telling you right out it's for IBS.
But the greatest part of that ad is referring to the male genitals as dick. It's easily the best part of that ad. All right, hey, gentlemen, you are the captain now.
Okay.
I feel like you two have probably seen, there's an episode of Star Trek Voyager. The episode is called Tuvix. Are either of you familiar with this?
Yeah.
So, in the episode Tuvix, two of the members of the
USS Voyager
are sent on an away mission. We've got Tuvok, who's a Vulcan, and Neelix, who is something, but he's the cook for the Voyager.
Talaxian.
There you go. Thanks, Joe. So they both go on this away mission, and they're being teleported back to the ship.
Transported.
Thank you.
get your verbs right.
I'm sorry. They're being transported back to the ship, and they're carrying some sort of spore or fungi. And it turns out that the transporting process, when combined with this particular kind of spore, initiates some sort of reaction, which causes both Tuvok and Neelix to merge into a new singular being that refers to himself as Tuvix.
That's so right. I remember this episode. Yes.
So
yes.
So where there were once two crew members, there is now one new crew member named Tuvix, made up of the other two people. Now, Tuvix, though, again, I can't stress enough, is a brand new person. He's not just, it's not a Jekyll and Hyde situation. And so the doctor, the holographic doctor,
the EMH, emergency medical hologram.
Thank you, Joe. He eventually discovers a way where he can reverse that process and he can bring back Tuvok and Neelix, but at the cost of essentially murdering Tuvix, killing this brand new third person who has been created. And Captain Janeway has to make a difficult decision. She has to decide whether or not to allow Tuvix to continue or to murder Tuvix to bring back Tuvok and Neelix. So I pose that same dilemma to you two gentlemen and myself. What would you do? I feel like different Star Trek captains would react in different ways. I don't feel like it's an easy decision one way or another. So I'm curious to see if you two were the captain of the USS Voyager. What would you do in that scenario?
Is this an episode that you recently saw, Sean?
Yeah. Did you watch this, Sean?
No, it's honestly not. I remembered it. Voyager, honestly, I've seen more episodes of Voyager than I have The Next Generation. Voyager was the thing.
Man.
Voyager, no, I know, but Voyager was the thing that when I grew up, it was on UPN, and that was my gateway into Star Trek. Like, I watched Voyager before I watched TNG. So, Janeway was my first captain, essentially.
Janeway was your first captain. She's a good captain.
Can I just take a second to point out the sheer irony of Sean asking us a Star Trek question?
I know.
I thought you'd enjoy it. I thought you two would like it.
I'm already enjoying it. I already have an answer. I'm ready to go.
But listen, Janeway, though, I feel like is much more of a rebel, fly-by-the-seat-of-her-pants captain, way more so than the morally Picard. There are certain captains who I feel would make certain decisions, and Janeway,
well, I
feel, is a wild card compared to many of them.
I think that Janeway, if she were in normal circumstances, if she were not in the Delta Quadrant, would behave more similarly to Picard.
Her circumstances have made her more desperate, perhaps.
One priority. Yeah. Any of the captains would have made a different decision.
Really?
No, I don't think any of them would have.
You think Picard would have killed someone, basically, to bring two people back who were essentially dead?
Here's the thing, Picard has a different understanding of sentience than most, because Data is his second officer.
Right, yeah, but isn't the question that's being posed here? You've got Tuvok and Neelix who essentially died when the transporter accident happened. So your decision is to kill an innocent being to bring back two people who are essentially already dead.
Well, no one is in the wrong here, but when you break it down to basic math, two lives are greater than one.
Right.
But the two lives have already been taken, I guess.
Right.
In the Star Trek universe, you're going to go with the Vulcan logic, the good of the many outweighs the good of the few.
Outweigh the good of the few.
Or the one.
But that at the cost of murdering an innocent person.
Yeah, you bring two people back.
I guess a Vulcan would, for sure. A Vulcan would, yeah.
And that when you have very morally ambiguous circumstances, you're gonna have to go to logic.
I suppose that's one way to look at it.
It comes down to a question of whether you think that the two men were already dead because of the incident, and you're bringing them back to life by making a decision to murder somebody. Is that essentially what you're saying?
It is. The way that I interpret it is that as soon as that merger happens, Tuvok and Neelix cease to exist, which in my opinion means that they have died. So it's basically, would you bring two people back to life by murdering an innocent person?
Honestly, my choice, I would take the best of both worlds here, because this is Star Trek and I can, which means I'm going to use their biosignatures and bring them back without killing Tuvix.
How are you going to do that, Mike?
Well, using the same method, except also restoring Tuvix using a replicator.
I mean, that's clearly impossible for absolutely no reason, but but it absolutely is, because otherwise you're not just moving someone's consciousness in Star Trek, you're destroying it and remaking it.
Isn't that what you'd be doing, though, in this case?
That's more of an additive division thing.
I see no reason that we can't have all three. We have all three biosignatures.
Listen, that certainly makes sense, but it's obviously impossible because Star Trek.
Mike, are you saying that because we have the biosignature, all you need is like a replicator and then you can just create that person when you have their biosignature?
Literally, yes, that is true.
That's how it's supposed to work, but they explore the biosignature a bit deeper in Deep Space Nine, and the systems that have to be in place for long-term storage of a person, it took up the entire space station for just like two people. So
okay, but we have an example where you have...
You're going to reference that Pulaski episode, and I fucking hate Dr. Pulaski, and you know it.
Okay, well, I wasn't going to because I thought that was a given. I actually thought that was kind of the basis for my theory here, or hypothesis, I guess. That episode is the first one to kind of suggest that you can restore a person using their biosignature, using the transporter. So there's an episode where Data challenges the computer to make... well,
yeah, that's the episode. That's Pulaski.
That's the original Moriarty episode.
Oh, okay.
But there's another one later...
Yes.
Where he figures out that he's not real. And
our listeners and myself stopped listening 5 minutes ago.
In any event, the point is that they're able to store...
Sean, just do a voiceover that Mike and Joe argue for 5 minutes about episode of The Next Generation they were talking about.
They were able to store an entire universe and two sapient beings, at the very least... on a cube that was like 3 inches across. And you're telling me that they can't...
People's signatures took up a whole...
I find that hard to believe. I think that's a retcon.
Does a biosignature include that person's up-to-date memories from the time that they were last scanned? Like memories? Are those encoded as data?
Yeah, it's supposed to.
Yeah.
That's nuts. I have nothing important to add. I just... That's wild. Well, I didn't get to answer what I would do.
No, you sure didn't.
I would keep Tuvix, by the way.
Why? He looked really creepy. Anyway, Mike, you're up next.
Tuvix kind of reminded me of Bordas.
Yes, absolutely.
He was a less fun, more rapey Bordas.
Yeah, but I just can't. Yeah, I can't justify killing an innocent person to bring back two people who already died. I just can't do that.
Well, then you do not belong in a captain's chair.
Unless they were two people with emotional significance to me. Like, if it was, like, my daughter and my wife, then, yeah, I'm going to bring them back from the dead, and I'm going to kill this innocent Joe Blow.
But yeah, if it then were you just definitely all things, don't belong in a captain's chair.
Right, but if it's all things being equal, and it's just like, hey, there's this new person, and these two people already died from a horrible accident, it's like, yeah, that was a terrible accident, but I'm not going to, like, kill a third person to bring two people back. That's crazy. I'm not a murderer. You guys are crazy.
Yeah, I already rang the bell, so...
Dang.
Yeah. Mike, we're going to you next.
Yeah, I want to talk about Marvel Phase 4.
Ooh.
Okay.
Yeah, so, Joe, who is this brought to us by?
This segment about Marvel Phase 4 is brought to us by Make It Number 28. I always wanted to be a mother, but 2 years ago when my uterus was destroyed in a kayak accident, I knew I was going to have to adopt. And that's what I did. I rescued the most precious Shiba Inu from a no-kill shelter, and we've been inseparable ever since.
Wait, what?
Sir Prancelot is so smart, but the government told me I can't send him to school with the other kids because dogs ain't human children. Can you believe that? This story is heartbreaking and difficult to listen to, which is why Make It Number 28 needs your support to stop such outrageous oversights from ever happening again. Make It Number 28 needs you to call your congressional representative and urge them to pass an amendment to the U.S. Constitution legally recognizing pets and inanimate objects as human children. You can find out more at homepages.geocities.com/34ab/makeitnumber28.html.
/keylogger.com.
back to you, Mike.
Thank you. So I think that we have to bring it back around to entertainment. We're supposed to talk about this shit, and it's been a long time. So I want to talk about Marvel Phase 4. So let's break it down real quick, and then we'll talk about it. So
all right. So Phase 4 comes after Phase 3, but before Phase 5.
That's correct.
I think it's going to happen immediately following the events of Phase 3.
Thank you. Yes. So Phase 3 is differing
from Sean, think that it's going to take place immediately before the events of Phase 5.
I don't think that's different at all, actually.
I disagree.
I also disagree.
That's very similar. Are we going to... Should I go? Should I get into this, guys?
Yes. Yes, come on.
All right, so we've got a series of movies, including Black Widow, The Eternals, Shang-Chi, and The Legend of the Ten Rings, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, and Thor, Love and Thunder. And we've got the television series The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, WandaVision, Loki, something called What If, which this is the first time I've ever even seen that, but
yeah,
What If, and then Hawkeye. So I kind of just want to get into it. What do we think about Phase 4? What do we think about the direction of Marvel?
I wanna say something. To my knowledge, Phase 4 is entirely through the Disney Plus streaming platform, right? Nothing in Phase 4 is actually a theatrical release?
No, that's not my understanding at all. No.
Okay, I thought I'd heard that. So there are some theatrical...
The television series are all going to be...
The What If, the Loki, there's a lot of television... Okay.
Those are all going to be Disney, yeah.
Personally, anything related to Phases 1 through 3... I care about anything new. I don't give a shit about, and I hope that I do. I hope that I'm drawn into them. But like, so the next Thor movie, yeah, absolutely, I want to see it. The next Doctor Strange, yes, absolutely, I want to see it. Shang-Chi or like whatever the What If series or all of that. It's like I don't care. Like, why would I care about that?
Black Widow, you also care about?
No, not, you know, I should. I should. Well, because she's dead, Mike. She's dead. So,
or
I don't
she?
Give a shit about a prequel about someone who died.
Or at least we think it's a prequel.
Well, definitely sacrificed herself for the Soul Stone.
Sean,
in
that
Endgame.
Doesn't mean
yeah,
anything
people,
in comic books.
People
die
just
all
always
the time.
Dead. Yeah, in comic books, they remain dead forever. It's
okay,
known.
Well, then I look forward to the next Iron Man movie. Like, no, I don't give a shit. She died.
Except that there's not another Iron Man movie.
Right, okay, so the Black Widow movie, after it comes out, when spoilers inevitably hit the internet, if someone says, oh, cool, she's alive and she didn't die in Endgame, then I'll go see it. All right.
I actually agree. I don't give a shit about prequels either. I probably will not see it unless the same thing happens
yeah, right?
to me. Well, we'll see. I end up seeing them all regardless because I was the guy who didn't, and Joe can attest to this because we were roommates at the time, I didn't want to see Guardians of the Galaxy. I thought it was so stupid. I thought this is gonna be so dumb. I'm like, there's no way in hell I'm seeing Guardians of the Galaxy. I had never even heard of it.
It was so good.
It seems so stupid.
It certainly wasn't a terribly popular comic book.
Years later, I saw it, and now it's my favorite of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I love Guardians of the Galaxy. It's like it's the bomb. So to me, I'm actually sorry.
Wait, no. You just said it's the bomb?
I sure did. I said it was the bomb diggity.
Jesus Christ, Mike.
I'm an old man now, Sean.
Well, clearly, we all heard what you just said.
I'm going to weigh in now and just say I don't really give a shit.
About all of Phase 4? You don't give a shit?
About all of Marvel.
Ooh.
He's a DC guy.
Yeah, I'm a DC guy. You know, I enjoyed several of the movies, but I'm not emotionally attached to any of it.
Yeah.
Except maybe Spider-Man a bit. I did read a lot of Spider-Man as a kid.
Spider-Man's fucking awesome.
I agree.
He's the best.
The only thing I'm interested in Phase 4 is What If.
Which I know absolutely nothing about,
well,
so you're going to have to explain
that. That comic book series was an anthology of sorts where each issue would be like, what if Wolverine and the Hulk fought?
Oh, that's my kind of shit right there.
Right? Yeah. That's awesome. So it's literally just what if this weird situation happened.
But if there's no like, I feel like canon is important. Like, that's what gets me invested in shit. Like, if I'm playing a video game for 40 hours and all of a sudden one of the choices I make didn't matter at all, I get pissed off. So why would I want to watch some what-if bullshit about shit that doesn't matter if it's not canonical?
The same reason you'd watch, like, any other show that
is outside Marvel.
Yeah, I mean,
just because it's going to be cool to see, like, explosions and they're fighting? Like, that? No, what are you talking about?
Isn't that what pretty much drives you to the movie theater, Sean?
For me personally, yes, I love spectacle. But what I'm saying is that if I'm invested personally in the Marvel universe. So
yeah,
if I know
there's
that there's
no
a canonical
canon in comic
narrative,
books.
No, but there is canon in the MCU. There
for
absolutely
now.
Is. For now,
yeah,
yes.
For now.
Until I'm told otherwise. But so a what if series, why would I give a fuck? Like, no, tell me what actually is happening is important. Like, I can watch YouTube videos of people computer generating Iron Man versus the Hulk or whatever the fuck they want to do, like, all day long.
Sean, think about it this way. These what ifs are canon. This is what would happen if this happened. It's not speculation. It is a canonical answer to that question.
Yeah, but that question is not actually raised in the narrative, in the canonical narrative of the MCU.
But it's about to be.
It could be.
Tangentially, yeah.
It's like, about to be.
But not into actual narrative, though. It doesn't, like, you can't.
Apparently,
if you do,
it is.
But that doesn't make any sense, Joe.
Well, nobody asked you.
Well, you knew you guys did. Didn't
no,
you?
Mike did. I didn't give a fuck what you thought.
Well, Mike asked.
I didn't even know what if was. That was part of the premise here.
Seems like a big waste of time to me.
Well, you know,
just
what
imagine
I'm
that.
Instead,
imagine
right
that some guy in the Marvel Cinematic Universe has developed a really great simulator, and he can just ask it questions. It's a what-if machine, like in Futurama, right? You ask it a question, and it plays out the scenario for you, and it's happening in the MCU. Right? Is that? Am I understanding that correctly, Joe? Is that pretty much what it is?
Yeah, kind of, except without, you know, Futurama involved.
So Futurama doesn't exist in the MCU?
No,
I just don't understand why I would give a shit about that.
Because it's cool to watch.
Okay, for like 5 minutes,
I'm gonna wedge in here to talk about DC Comics for a minute. I just want to be on record with the new Gods announcement. You know, they're making a motion picture about Jack Kirby's new Gods series, where they're going to introduce the villain Darkseid to the silver screen.
He's a big Superman adversary, right?
Darkseid was an adversary to everybody. But a lot of people are going to see a lot of parallels between Darkseid and Thanos.
Okay.
And that's because they're almost identical.
All right.
Aren't there a lot of characters that are almost identical
between
the two?
Absolutely. Yeah. I just wanted to be on record on this podcast saying Darkseid came first and then Marvel created Thanos.
I see.
Okay.
So Thanos is a shitty dark side, is what you're saying.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Fuck Thanos.
Hmm. Well, I wasn't real invested in Thanos. Wasn't my favorite villain.
Yeah.
So,
well, you're fucking nuts.
He was a poor shadow of Darkseid.
As soon as DC puts out a movie half as good as Marvel and a villain half as good as Thanos, then maybe I'll get on board with you guys, but Marvel did an amazing job.
Heath Ledger's
and Thanos
Joker
was fucking
was
awesome.
9, maybe even 12 times better Thanos.
I gotta agree with Joe there.
You're right. Ledger's Joker was amazing 10 years ago in a Batman movie.
Oh, so it doesn't matter anymore?
No, it does. I'm just saying it's a Batman movie. It's not a Justice League movie. It's not like a big overarching DC movie.
DC has abandoned a combined universe. They're not doing an MCU, man.
Thank God, because they sucked at it.
I agree. It was very heartbreaking to watch.
But yes, Heath Ledger was fucking amazing. That was a brilliant move by Christopher Nolan. But do I think that it takes anything away from or is way better than Josh Brolin's Thanos in the MCU, which is a 23-movie culmination? Oh, yes. Oh, my God. I think Thanos, it's apples to oranges. I think it's an Thanos individual was performance. Pretty
good. I agree. Oranges are awesome. Fuck apples.
No. Heath Ledger did a great job in a one-off Batman movie. Josh Brolin lived up to the expectations of a 23-episode arc of the MCU. That's crazy.
Thanos lived up to it. I can't even put those two on the same stage, man. No. They're not even fucking close.
I'm sorry.
The MCU
Endgame
villains
wasn't very
are
good.
Dude, Josh Brolin was amazing as Thanos. You guys are fucking crazy if you don't think that he was acting the shit out of that.
He was
James
good.
Brolin's a great actor. I'm saying Thanos kind of
no,
blows.
No, Josh Brolin.
Josh Brolin.
What did I say?
James.
All right.
No, but no, I want to.
Josh Brolin fucking knocked it out of the park, you guys. He
Do
was
you know
amazing.
Who
would have
been a great Thanos is James Brolin.
The reason that he stood out so much is because the MCU has a history of just not great villains.
Also, Marvel in general.
Yeah.
I disagree. Other than Batman, name the great DC villains. No Batman allowed.
No Batman.
So no Batman.
No,
great
no
DC
Batman,
villains.
No Batman villains at all?
No Batman. Name the best DC villains. No Batman.
Darkseid.
Come on. I'm saying that's you're talking about one franchise. Yeah, Heath Ledger was fucking great as the Joker. But as the culmination of a 23-film epic narrative, Josh Brolin...
Name one franchise in the MCU other than Spider-Man with a great villain.
Mandarin.
Oh, yeah.
The Mandarin is a fucking joke.
With ten rings?
My God. That's dumb as a foil for Iron Man.
It kind of brings me to my next point, which is that we're actually going to get some good villains. They're not coming in Phase 4, though. From the Fantastic Four universe.
All right. Sean, to answer your question, first of all, I'm going to say Sinestro, Lex Luthor, Brainiac, Black Adam, Ra's al Ghul, Deathstroke. Oh my God, Deathstroke?
Ra's al Ghul's Batman. Fuck you.
Apparently, you can't go if they were even featured in Batman.
He crossed lines a bit, but you're right. I'll withdraw Ra's al Ghul, but I'm keeping Deathstroke.
DC is defined a little bit more by villains than Marvel.
Batman villains.
Batman is
well,
a huge
Batman
part of the DC
has the
cinema,
best villains.
Or the DC
he's,
universe.
He's one of the holy or trinity the... of the DC. Eliminating Batman is like eliminating Spider-Man for
it
Marvel.
Is.
It's
yeah,
just
exactly.
not.
Yeah, but Marvel succeeded without Spider-Man for a decade.
Not because of the villains.
It succeeded on great protagonists, not great villains. The villains are terrible in the Marvel Cinematic
in
Universe.
In every movie.
That's fine, but I'm saying the MCU could have survived without Spider-Man. DC cannot survive without Batman.
Well, I disagree. What DC needs in movies to survive are people who know how to make fucking comic book movies, and they just haven't been hiring those people. They keep hiring Zack Snyder.
That's right.
If DC had a Kevin Feige, they'd be in a much better place. But
yeah,
they
agreed
don't.
There, yeah.
Yeah. That's why the MCU is great, Sean, is because of Kevin Feige.
Yeah.
He's one of the reasons for sure.
No, he's the reason. I'm giving you a point.
I don't know. I think that there are some other reasons, but I'll take the point.
Well, I wrote it down, so you don't have a choice.
I'm more of a casual comic book fan. I think Sean, you and I are probably more similar in that way. I mean, Joe is very invested. But I have always been more... I root for DC because I really think that they've got the better story elements than Marvel does. But the Marvel movies have been better, so like
they've
recently...
They've been so much better. Oh, my
yeah,
God.
Yeah, so I've been a little bit more invested just in terms of the cinematic universe in Marvel, but I really want DC to be more successful because I think their characters are deeper, I think their villains are better. And in great fiction, I think a villain really defines the hero.
Absolutely. Not just in comic books. That's across fiction. Like you said, Mike, the protagonist is often defined by their antagonist.
Absolutely. So I would like to see DC do better.
I've been waiting for 20 years, man. I haven't seen a decent DC movie. Well, Aquaman and Wonder Woman are great. And I also like Shazam. So things are starting to get better. But other than that, it's been since like Batman 89. So it's been a long wait. Next up, gentlemen, we're going to be playing a game.
Yes.
Ooh, this is a game I call... This is actually a new game format, never done on this show before.
What?
I call it subjective trivia.
Oh, ooh. Yes. I like subjective things because
I
you
like
can
trivia.
Never really be wrong.
Oh, but one of you will be.
Mike.
How subjective can it be? Is it subjective based on your perspective,
well,
Joe?
We'll get into that, but Sean, what is subjective trivia brought to us by?
It's brought to us by the McNabrin Corporation.
McNabrin?
Everybody loves McNabrin's squeezable cheese whiz. Everybody loves steak. That got us thinking. Introducing McNabrin's squeezable liquid beef. Finally, you can get that tasty beef flavor without the shape and texture you've been chained to for all these years. Flavors like sirloin slush, porterhouse muck, and ribeye ooze. McNabrin squeezable liquid beef. It's beef on the go.
Go beef.
Go beef.
All right, gentlemen, we're going to play subjective trivia. This is how subjective trivia works. Each of you are going to be able to answer the question in every round, and the winner of each round will be determined by me.
Ooh.
It's subjective to me. Now, okay. This specific round of subjective trivia is going to be D&D or fantasy RPG themed. So
oh,
what
God.
I'm going to do is give you the name of a magical item that one could run across in a fantasy RPG, and your job is going to be to tell me what it is and what it does. And I will choose between the two of you which answer I like better.
I like it.
I like this game.
There's more. I want you to be locked into your answers, so I want you to go to your Hangouts windows and type them out to me so that you can't change it after the other person gives their answer. I will be awarding the points, the correct answers for creativity and also just sheer entertainment value. So we're not going for like accuracy or believability.
We're not,
Yeah, we are trying to entertain people.
So
here.
I don't have to like try to answer it accurately?
Well, it should make sense for the name I give you, but it should also be an entertaining answer. I'm going to give you guys an example. This is not a real question, just one how it might go. So, the Sword of Fairness. This magical blade is possessed by a spirit of absolute equality. If your enemy drops their weapon, the sword leaps out of your hand. Something along those lines, but
that's
ideally
a lot of typing.
Funnier.
Got it.
But I guess we don't have to answer immediately, so it's not really a big deal.
Yeah.
You don't have to answer immediately, and also all the pauses will be edited out later. Thank you, Sean.
How does that work? Magnets.
There's bits of gravity.
The first item that I want you to describe to me is the Cursed Ring of Minor Inconvenience.
The Cursed Ring of Minor Inconvenience.
Just hit send when you're done, gentlemen.
All right, I just finished.
All right, Sean's locked in. I'm also not going to read them until after you say it. That way,
I'm excited about this.
That way, my laughter is genuine.
Oh, shit.
Okay, contrary to the way things normally go, I'm going to go to Mike first.
All right, so I think that the ring has to have some advantage to the bearer, so I'm going to say that the ring grants a glamour. So your appearance has changed to be absolutely beautiful at the expense of just being late for everything by about 14 minutes.
All right.
Just everything ever by
14 minutes.
Doesn't matter what you do. You can try as hard as you can. Something's going to happen. It's going to stop you. You're going to be late.
I mean, that's certainly a minor inconvenience. Sean, what do you got?
Well, Joe, I wrote the cursed ring of minor inconvenience. When wearing this ring, your enemy will suddenly notice that his shoe or boot is untied, or suddenly remember that it is his anniversary and he has not purchased a gift for his wife. This momentary distraction gives you all the time you need to thrust your blade into his sternum, rendering him dead.
So you have to put the ring on him?
Yes.
First you have to get the ring on him.
No. You put the ring on yourself, and then your enemy will notice.
But Sean, it's a cursed ring.
It's cursed.
This is subjective.
Yeah, for me. And I've rendered my verdict. While both are amusing to me, I am going to give this one to Mike for actually having any element of a curse. All right, gentlemen. Item number two is the humane cape.
The humane cape. Okay. Okay, I'm going with a little bit too literal here, probably.
All right, Mike's answer is locked. And I've got Sean's answer. All right, Sean, we're going to go with you first. What you got?
All right. Wearing the humane cape means that you cannot kill anyone while wearing it. Instead, when you bring down your sword upon your enemy's body, your enemy is teleported to an evil human sanctuary, and you are given a ribbon that says, "A pretty good guy."
God damn it. I'm going to...
If you somehow toss the cape onto an enemy, they are transported to the same sanctuary, and Mike is stupid.
Before I even answer, you already won, so I'm gonna read it. Like I said, mine's really literal.
You
have
to read it, Mike, or else I will, because you typed it in.
Mine is really literal, and it's not funny at all. And when draped in the humane cape, the cloaked individual is granted the ability to summon food only edible by the malnourished.
Yeah, Sean wins.
But mine is pretty good as an item.
It's fine. It's a fine item. I would not say it's pretty good.
It matches the description nicely.
Yeah, okay. Moving on. The next item, gentlemen, is the Belt of Ultimate Virility.
Oh, dear God.
Both gentlemen are typing. I see the three dots that says they are typing. The score is currently Sean 1, Mike 1. It's all tied up.
So fucking stupid.
All right, Mike is locked in. And there's Sean. All right, Mike, we're going to you first.
All right, so the Belt of Ultimate Virility, it's the antithesis to the chastity belt, and it grants the ability to entice any potential partner to have sex with you at the cost of guaranteed pregnancy.
All right. Sean, what you got?
When wearing the Belt of Ultimate Virility, nearby enemies are immediately impregnated by you. They begin to experience morning sickness, cramps, spotting, and worse. Any efforts to abort their offspring are met by picket lines of Republicans. Bringing their children to term results in minus 20 sleep.
God damn it. That's pretty good.
I mean, it's structurally unsound because sleep is not a stat. It is very amusing, and I'm once again going to give that one to Sean.
Woohoo! I like this game. I'm enjoying this.
Though I believe yours would actually exist in D&D, Mike. I just want that to be...
Thank you. I think I'm somewhat crippled by that. I need to think outside the box.
Get sillier.
Yeah, especially with this next one that's not going to give you a whole hell of a lot to go on.
All right.
The next item is the Pearl of Eden.
Oh, Jesus.
Pearl of Eden.
And both gentlemen are typing. I see three dots. And Mike's answer is locked in.
Oh, shit. Okay. That's got to be pretty funny.
All right. Since we've been taking turns, Sean, we're going to go to you first.
Okay. The Pearl of Eden is a small white stone that, when ingested, grants the user unlimited power. They are suddenly able to shoot lightning out of their hands and shit. Or take over the bodies of dead people. It's like whatever they want to do. It's crazy, man. Pearl of Eden.
All right.
All right. Mike, what have you got?
Yes, the Pearl of Eden is quite simply the goddess of love's clit.
That's way shorter than mine.
That's it, though.
It's significantly shorter. They're both very amusing. I like any magical item that you have to ingest in order to enjoy the magical properties of it.
Other than a potion or elixir.
Yeah, no, a solid object that you have to put either in your mouth or your anus is hilarious.
Like a bezoar, right?
Like a bezoar, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's another one for Sean.
Mike had a really great one. When he read that, I was really worried, but I'm glad. I'm glad that he sucks.
Gentlemen, we're coming into the final round.
But I already lost.
Well, just like every previous game, we're just going to make this one worth 3 points.
A billion points.
All right.
And the final item is the secret barrel of secrets.
Okay.
Both gentlemen are frantically typing away, trying to explain what the secret barrel of secrets is. Mike Pareto really needs this one in order to clinch victory. All right, Mike's answer is locked in. Still waiting on current leader Sean Keller. Sean Keller's keyboard makes almost no sound.
He's probably typing on a laptop, I'm guessing.
All right, gentlemen. Final round. Mike, what have you got?
Well, the secret barrel of secrets. Within the barrel exists a string.
A secret string! You pull the string to reveal one embarrassing snapshot of Sean at the Christmas party!
Very classic SpongeBob reference.
Yeah, indeed.
Sean, what is the secret barrel of secrets?
You should toss the secret barrel of secrets to your enemies. Seriously, don't open that thing. Toss it to your enemies. When they open it, they'll be all like, "Oh my God!" And then they'll die. So again, I cannot stress enough, do not open up that barrel. That thing is crazy, man. Don't open it. It's a barrel full of secrets.
Okay, gentlemen. This is actually kind of a difficult decision. I like both of your answers, and I'm trying to decide which is stronger.
You could always give us a tie.
No, I'm going to give it to Mike.
Of course yes. You are.
Yeah, the SpongeBob
his last answer was stronger.
His last answer was stronger, and as almost every game we've played over the history of this show, that means he wins.
And Mike's Patrick is quality.
He does a quality Patrick.
Thank you.
This is Mike, true.
Mike, could you tell the listeners to listen to A Little Nonsense every Tuesday morning in Patrick's voice?
Well, I think you should listen to A Little Nonsense every Tuesday.
Yeah, but now do it as Patrick.
All right. All right.
And Joe gives me the point back, and we're good.
I think you should probably win that game based on your series of better answers. But
you got the last one for sure.
Did I say that was worth 2 or 3?
70. Three.
Oh. No, you said 3.
70.
All right, well then Mike won. If it was only 2, you'd have tied.
Yeah, you said 3.
Okay.
Secret string.
Well, I stand by that answer then. For our last segment, we're going to you, Sean.
I want to talk about finales. Who's this fucking thing brought to us by?
It's brought to us by Kraft Borderline Impossible Mac. For foodies who won't eat Easy Mac, even though it's incredibly delicious, just because it comes out of a box, now there's Kraft Borderline Impossible Mac. We skipped right over Reasonably Hard Mac, Difficult Mac, and Professional Mac to give you the truest of true foodie experiences. Kraft Borderline Impossible Mac is a 721-page guide to planting and growing wheat, raising chickens for egg production, creating organic pasta from scratch, raising dairy cows, converting their milk into cheese, aging and drying the cheese, creating butter from the cream layer, and 49 other important steps to making mac and cheese that's probably close to as good as Easy Mac. You'll be so proud of yourself. Or more likely, you'll just fucking buy our goddamn box mac and cheese from now on. Get over yourself. Kraft Borderline Impossible Mac. Back to you, Sean.
All right. Well, I love that shit. I bought it, but only to
post it on Instagram.
It takes the average person about 7 years. Yeah.
It was a great illusion that I made it myself.
All right. There was a recent episode where we had discussed the finales of certain shows. I want to open it up to not just shows, but movies, books. If you had the chance to take as long as you want to take, invite as many different people as you want to invite to help you to rewrite the finale to any show or movie series, what would it be? You don't have to give an exact description of what your rewrite would be, but if there's a particular product that you would want to rewrite because you're not satisfied with how it ended, what would it be? And Joe, I know that there's a particular series with a horrible theme song that you might want to think about. Mike, I don't know.
I thought Serenity was a perfectly good ending to that series.
No, I didn't like that movie. Fuck that movie.
I know. Really? I know. Yeah, Joe didn't like it because somebody died.
Wash died, which was heartbreaking, but yeah. Also it just wasn't very good. I'm fine with death, but also that's not what I'm going to choose, but continue.
Is there a movie series or a television series, or if you can think of another kind of fucking series, a book series maybe, that you feel like you would like a chance to rewrite the finale?
Yeah, can I pick a video game?
Yes, absolutely. Mass Effect 3.
How did you know, Sean?
Of course I knew.
This one, though, so the premise was we should pick, you know, actors or whatever to come back and redo it.
Tell people though what the Mass Effect 3 ends where you have 3 possible endings.
Well,
right?
Yeah, so Mass Effect 3, the Mass Effect franchise, which by the way remains one of my very favorite franchises. I think it's
amazing.
It's in my top, you know, like 2 sci-fi franchises.
It's really good. Yeah.
Yeah, but absolutely.
It was promised from early on that your decisions would affect the outcome of the games, and kind of they dropped the ball on that? Like the
well, what? They, but they did. They no. But the decisions did affect it throughout they most did of the game until yeah. the end.
Well, yeah, they affected the it. They affected a lot of things throughout the series, except for the ending, which you had three choices basically at the ending. I mean, you could there was the choice to destroy the Reapers. There was the choice to do the you control the Reapers. And then there was the choice where you would do the symbiosis, which you would just
right.
combine whatever artificial life forms with organic life forms and have like this weird, I don't know, kumbaya harmony shit. That really, any of the choices were just bad. completely unrelated to your choices throughout the series. So if I had to rewrite any ending, and believe me, there are lots of different endings I would love to rewrite. I would pick that one. I would pick that one because why the fuck not just have a really satisfying ending to that series? You know, like why not just have Shepard be like, fuck you, and just pulls out a big gun and blows off Harbinger's dick. And Garrus is like, that's right, Shepard. And it's just over, you know? It's like,
bag him and tag him, Shepard.
Yeah, yeah. I just
wish I knew why they were trying to make us all turn into doctors.
Wait, what?
We'll never know.
Yeah, I guess we'll never know. But really, why can't they just, oh, we got this big fucking gun. We're just going to blow up all the goddamn Reapers. And you go around and you just kill all the fucking Reapers. And you win the game that way. And it's real satisfying. And you're just standing over Harbinger's gigantic face. And you're like, I fucking win.
Yeah, it seems like video games from long ago, it was like there's a definitive ending. And you're a winner and you feel very accomplished. And then the games like this come along and it's like, well, you beat the game, but we're not going to let you feel good about it.
Right. Yeah. Like maybe they couldn't figure out a way to get all of your choices to matter, but at least make it satisfying, you know, like,
right. Yeah.
Well, the way to make all of your choices matter is just to have some sort of ending montage that shows the outcome of all of those choices. So it doesn't all have to end in what you do with the Reapers. There are multiple threads that you can end all throughout the ending.
Well, that does kind of happen to an extent, but...
It's pretty limited.
Not to a satisfactory extent.
The montage is mostly just about shit that happened in 3 in characters from Mass Effect 3.
I only wish I knew why they wanted to turn us all into doctors.
Credits.
I guess we'll never know.
All right.
Indoctrinated.
The project I would take on to give a new ending, I think it would actually have to be Quantum Leap.
Ooh.
Ooh, all right.
Yeah, see, here's the thing. Quantum Leap, when it ended, it got canceled out of the blue.
So they didn't have
an ending.
Yeah.
When the last episode finished, it was just a normal episode. When the last episode finished, there was a text Chiron that was the ending. And it said that Dr. Samuel Beckett continued leaping from life to life for the remainder of his life, but never, ever got back home.
That's disappointing.
And that's how the series ends.
Why would you, again, not satisfying, why would you choose that?
I don't know.
If it's just going to be text, why not be like, why not have the best possible outcome? Just
right? I don't understand, but that's the ending they slapped onto the end when it was suddenly canceled. So I just feel like, you know, I enjoyed watching reruns of that show when I was a child, and it had a big impact on me. I would like to actually make a proper ending for that show.
I remember my parents loved that show.
It's a great show.
Scott Bakula.
Damn right.
Excellent captain.
I would... Oh, I'm going to choose Seinfeld. Seinfeld ended in the worst way. They almost tried to do... And look, Jerry Seinfeld and Larry David have gone on record and saying, like, oh, I don't think there's anything wrong with what we tried to do. No, there was something wrong. They tried to do a clip show for their series finale. And what Seinfeld should have done was a show that was no more interesting or involved than any of their other episodes for the past 7, 8, 9 seasons. Seinfeld tried to bring in all these other characters who had been there, and it was like, oh yeah, we're going to bring in the soup Nazi and all this other shit. No, Seinfeld tried too hard,
yeah,
and fell on its face. And that's what I would redo, because I feel like that show...
I'm sorry. I just had a thought that's funny. I'll add.
No, please. But that show aged so gracefully throughout its entire run. And then that very last episode, that was really like...
Yeah.
At least in my memory, you guys are older than me, but in my memory, that was the very first... oh my gosh, disappointment with like a big show with a finale. Like I can't remember an earlier disappointment with a finale of a show than Seinfeld, where everyone was like, really? That was it?
Yeah. It just barely predated the prequels, which aren't technically an ending. They're a beginning, but
right.
But it was did really happen after the finale of Quantum Leap though. I'm just,
well,
just throwing that out there.
But I remember feeling as I was watching it, like, that was it, really? And I'd never really felt that before. And I was trying to figure out why, and I couldn't figure it out then. I can now.
I feel like a really good ending to that show would have just been a totally normal episode, but right at the end when the bass line starts to go off, just a meteor hits New York City. Yeah. And a meteor destroys New York City, and that's it. That's the end.
I really do feel that a normal type episode would have been the best version of a finale for them. But they tried to go into this whole like clip show, hey, we're gonna do our greatest hits, whatever. But that was really the first show ever that I feel, or that I remember feeling disappointment in an ending for.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a strong choice.
Dr. Sam Beckett.
All right, gentlemen, with that musical sting, we're at the end of our episode. And
oh, no.
With a score of 2, Sean is our loser.
No, again? Again?
Twice in a row.
But I feel like I did so much better this time.
You did, but it was still exactly the same.
Yeah. It's still not good enough.
Well, see, the problem was Mike also had 2, but he received a negative point.
Oh, shit.
Yes.
And really, so, it was because of the fake D&D things. And I you know, I think listeners are going to listen, and they're going to be like, Sean probably won that.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely agree.
Oh, for
except
sure.
For that last
yeah,
question.
Yeah, yeah, no.
That last question, well, you really just fucked up and screwed
it, was,
it all.
Yeah, the last,
it was
I kind of shat the bed on that
game.
Last one.
It was a subjective yeah. game. I appealed to Joe on that last one.
Which is,
yeah.
It's really the only rule, is appeal to Joe. Yeah. So with that, that's our episode. I've been Joe Moracle.
I'm Sean Cannon.
And I'm Mike Pareto.
Have a great week, everyone. A Little Nonsense is copyright 2019 by its hosts. All ads are meant to be humorously fake. Any resemblance to a company, person, or other entity, real or imagined by someone else, is either entirely coincidental or purposeful parody. If you have a question, comment, or discussion topic, you can email us through the mailhole. That's mailhole@littlenonsense.com. You can find more episodes and anything else related to the show at littlenonsense.com. And now that the end of show business is concluded, I'll kindly ask, Sean, would you please take us out? Thank you.
little nonsense now and then is relished by the wisest men. A little whimsy here and there is often very necessary. Mingle a little folly with your wisdom.